Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Brian E. Roach and Zach Meckler.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. Incredibly depressed version. Brought to you in part by the Legends of Pittsburgh Cruise, where you can sail to the Caribbean, which I wish I could do right now, and hang out with a bunch of Steelers legends. My name is Brian E. Roach. I am the host who doesn't like toast. I am the host who hates playing in Oakland, California. I am also joined by frequent cohort and the professor of football, because Joe Kuzma is unavailable on the road, driving himself back from wherever he may have been. So the professor's here, Zach Meckler. Zach, I hesitate to say welcome aboard, but I'm glad you're here to commiserate.
Yeah, I'll just leave it at hello, Brian.
All right. So obviously, we're following up on the Oakland and Pittsburgh game that ended just recently, with the Steelers falling 24-21 as Chris Boswell's foot goes flying into the air, compliments of the turf in whatever the name of that Coliseum or awful, horrible stadium they play in is. And as the dirt goes flying, so do many of the hopes for the remainder of this season, in all likelihood. Let me first start off by saying it ain't over yet, and we'll get to that. But as much as we're all going to enjoy this bit, let's look at what happened in this game. Are you ready for that, man?
I mean, as ready as I'm going to be.
Yeah. And we're going to do our best here to try and keep it our normal, clean family show. But I'm not making any promises, folks, not this time around. You know, if a bad word slips out, I'll try and go back and beep it later. Let's just look at what we got. The Steelers essentially had no running game throughout the entire game against a defense that was ranked very low against the run. Jalen Samuels managed 28 yards on 11 carries. Dobbs had 15 yards on 2. Stephen Ridley had 4 yards on 5 carries. And unfortunately, Darius Hayward Bay had minus 7 on his 1 reverse attempt. Ben, when he was in there, did not play a bad game. He was 25 of 29, 282 yards, 2 touchdowns, a 130.2 passer rating. Josh Dobbs, on the other hand, 4 of 9, 24 yards, an interception for a passer rating of 12. And, you know, there's something, I don't know whether it's something in the air. Clearly, there's something in the turf. There's just something odd about playing in Oakland with this team. And, you know, the first half was weird in some ways. But, you know, they managed to come out of the first half in what I considered to be decent shape, right? I mean, we didn't know at the time that Ben was going to be sitting with a rib injury when we came out. But, you know, the Steelers drove down the field. Ben looked perfectly fine. They got a incredible, unbelievable catch by Juju Smith-Schuster to put themselves up 14-10 at the half. And while I wasn't comfortable because we were in Oakland, I didn't feel that bad at that point. How about you?
No, I actually felt better with that 14-10 lead, believe it or not, than I did last week against the Chargers. You know, I felt that last drive down the field was a very good drive. There were a couple mishaps here and there, but it was a nice way to capitalize. And I figured, you know, they're coming back out second half. Ben seems to be slinging the ball. Juju's playing out of his mind yet again. AB's making catches when he needed to be. I figured that was going to be a good opportunity for them to go up 21-10 and kind of start to take control of the game and start managing the clock at that point. I felt, like I said, I felt better this week at halftime than I did last week against the Chargers, because I had some weird feeling last week. This week, I thought with the way they were playing at the end of the half, that it was their game to potentially take over at that point.
And we're going to get into this heavily as we go along, because I agree with you, and I think it honestly was. except something changed. So let's look at the things that underwhelmed you in the first half. And for me, one of the big things, and we've talked about how the offensive line has gotten grown-ass man awards throughout the season and done a fantastic job and maybe even elevated themselves to look or feel like the top O-line in the game. That didn't happen today.
No. It
just didn't happen. I mean, I'm sorry, I get it. You know, there's been an argument made that it didn't matter what running back we put behind that offensive line, it was the line that was opening the holes. Yeah, well, and that may be still true, but when the line doesn't open any holes, the running backs don't do a very good job because they really kind of stunk against a team that had 10 sacks coming in, and I think they gave up two. I think it was just two. And a team that was low against the run, and they could not find a way to run the ball.
Yeah, I think a lot of that really came down to the Raiders really just playing hard up front. I mean, I think the Steelers, I don't want to say they got dominated up front on the offensive line, but realistically, they didn't have that grit to them that we've talked about so much with guys like DeCastro and Pouncey. And even Foster and Big Al, you know, they all have that kind of grittiness to them, and I didn't really see that today. And, you know, I think the whole argument with the running back not mattering, the offensive line's doing the work and vice versa, I think it's kind of like a circular argument. And at some point in time, the running back still does matter because there's a reason why, you know, not every single running back in the NFL ends up turning into a Hall of Famer or putting up all-pro type of statistics. So I think realistically, you know, I look at what Samuels did. I wasn't discouraged by him. You know, he really proved his chops as a pass-catching running back again today. I mean, he had 7 catches on 7 targets, you know, so he did his part in that game. But he was almost getting too cute at times behind the line. You know, he is a bigger guy. You know, he's 225, so he has the ability to kind of go north and south when he wants to. But he was kind of lacking any type of explosion. I know that was one of my knocks on him coming out from NC State this past offseason. He was a very well-rounded player. He put him a bunch of different places, but he didn't really have that explosion just yet. I'm hoping that's something he can develop in the future, but you kind of saw that when he's not hitting the hole quite as hard and the holes aren't even there to begin with. It's going to be a recipe for disaster. And the Steelers, you know, I think they tried to be a little bit harder on the run this time around than they have been in the recent weeks. But you know, at some point in time, something's got to give and you got to move the ball. You can't run it 3 times, have no first downs and punt it away. You got to start divvying it up, and for whatever reason, it just didn't seem to work out today.
No, it really didn't. I let me say this about Jalen Samuels. I really did like how he played in passing situations or catching the ball out of the backfield. And I agree with you. Maybe it's explosion. Maybe it's something else. He just looks like he plods. He's slow. He looks slow to me when he is being asked to run the ball from – you know, in a rushing way, you know, instead of catching it and being able to go, when he is just handed the ball off, especially on those sweeps. They tried several sweeps, pitches, you know, to the right side. They just they felt like they were taking forever to develop and get out there. And you know, whether that's heavy feet, I don't know what it is, but it didn't look good. And right now, you know, if James Conner's not ready to go next week, which I, you know, I haven't heard anything specific, there were inklings, and I think that there was somebody who tweeted out earlier that that's a possibility. Well, then they just don't have a running game right now, because I just don't see this committee of Samuels and Ridley, who was, again, very underwhelming. Admittedly, he only got, 5 touches. But you know, when you got 5 touches and you're getting 4 yards or whatever it was, you're not going to get a lot more touches. I mean, he had a nice run up the middle for a touchdown with Rosie Nix leading him the way through. That was a great, you know, a nice play. But, man, I tell you, the running game, as much as we've complained about them abandoning it early, they needed to abandon it this game. And maybe that would have worked in their benefit if what had happened and how this game transpired didn't transpire in the way it was. In the first half, I felt like the defense played well enough. I'm a bit disappointed they didn't get after the quarterback a little bit more. I don't think whatever the experiment is that they're doing to try and put these wide receivers on linebackers or linebackers on wide receivers, they're just getting caught now. There's apparently enough tape that defensive scheme needs to change. They've got to make some adjustments in how they're trying to attack teams, because teams have figured them out. When the Raiders can drive up and down the field on you, teams have figured out your defensive scheme, and it's time to make some adjustments. And I kind of put that on Keith Butler.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a lot of that. I know Tomlin kind of tried to coat over that during the past week with the criticism he took from the whole linebackers on Keenan Allen argument. And, you know, I understand the point of when you have your dime defense out there or your dollar defense or, you know, anything that's really not your base or nickel, you're going to have mismatches from time to time. But then when teams start to exploit that, I mean, you saw it deliberately. They started putting Keenan Allen last week in the slot, and they started doing the same exact thing with guys like Jordy Nelson and Jared Cook. You started seeing them shift a lot more to the slot. And when you're not willing to do anything to deviate that and switch up your matchups, whether that's having another linebacker on them or even a guy like Morgan Burnett who's not being effective covering the guy when they need to be, something needs to change. You need to find somebody that can be put in there in the slot to cover those mismatches, or have a guy that like that consistently covers around the guy. I know they experimented having Joe Hayden follow the number one guy, the number one threat around the field, and it seems like they've almost abandoned that. I mean, I haven't looked too closely at it, but it seems like in the last couple of weeks they've kind of started to deviate away from there when he was having immense success doing that early on in the year. But I put that squarely on Keith Butler. You know, there's times where he seems like he can have a brilliant play calling game, and then there's other games like the last couple of weeks we've seen, which are really crucial losses for the Steelers, where you've seen him kind of go out there and make some really scratching, puzzling moves where he'd like to see some sort of adjustment as the team starts figuring you out. And until he starts doing that, I'm not confident in this defense at all right now, which pains me to say, because I've been a truther for them, and I've looked at the bright side of, you know, the NFL is a pass happy league. There's going to be some numbers that get put up, but your ability to stop the opposing team is going to be what comes down to it in those critical moments. In the last 3 weeks, the Steelers have not been able to stop the opposing team in those critical moments, and that's proved costly for them.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, the other part of this is, of course, is that we said, you know, the Steelers go in leading 14-0 or 14-10. God, if only it was 14-0, 14-10 at the half, and then they come out in the second half, and Josh Dobbs takes the first series, and nobody seems to know why. It comes out that Ben's got a rib injury. And I get that Dobbs had to take that first series because Ben's not even out yet. I get that Dobbs may have had to take the second series because, again, Ben's not even on the sideline yet. And, you know, I can't remember. I still think it was third quarter. It was definitely before the fourth quarter rolled around. Ben finally comes out. Looks like he's ready to go. Looks like he's going to play. And they don't put him back in. And as much praise as we gave Josh Dobbs in the preseason, he did not look great in this game.
No, I mean, it's... I don't know. I'm at a loss. I don't know if it was due to the fact that coming off the bench in a situation like that on the road on the West Coast is a difficult scenario for you. You know, I understand that, especially a guy like Dobbs who really had never taken any type of real action, you know, getting thrown into what was seemingly a moderately friendly away environment. I mean, there were terrible towels all over that field. You know, so I thought that would kind of help him a little bit. And I get coming off the bench is difficult, especially when you don't have really any type of those reps with those top guys like Juju, like AB, like Vance. I understand that. But at the same time, you know, the Steelers almost showed their hand of not having much confidence in them because they seemed to adopt the run a lot more in the second half with Dobbs than they were in the first half without him. And that really kind of makes you one-dimensional as a team. And I understand, you know, there's the concept of the playbook changes when you have a guy like Ben Roethlisberger in there versus Josh Dobbs. And again, I get that the playbook becomes scaled down. But there's some plays where it was just a bad throw. You know, he would throw a duck and I know there was the one play on a crossing route, he missed Juju. There's another play where it looked like he very clearly had AB there and he didn't. And then there's the interception where when he was targeting AB and, you know, poor throw, AB, I looked like tried to kind of get the ball out of his way so that way they could just drop to the ground, turn into an interception. You know, I don't blame Dobbs necessarily because it was a very unfortunate situation to get thrown into a game like that. But at the same time, it's hard to look at that and say, that was a very great performance. And quite frankly, I know there will probably be some people that will come out and maybe start vouching for Landry Jones should have been in that situation because he had the experience, you know, what have you. But I really don't know if it would have made a difference in that situation just based on the game flow and based on how much the Steelers offense seemed to be struggling at that point with Dobbs in the game, or I should say without Ben in the game.
Yeah. Let's see. The Steelers, I think, had a drive that ended in a punt. That was the first drive of the second half. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 play drive. They followed that up with a 3 and out, or actually a 4 and out. They got a first down and then ended up going 3 and out after that. Then they followed that up with a 5-play drive, 6-play drive. And then to open the fourth quarter, they had a 3 and out. And then the next drive, which takes place with 7:59 left, Ben comes back in and they go right down the field and score. And the question that arose on Twitter and throughout Steelers Nation was, what the hell? Why is Ben coming? If he can play right now and he could play at the end of the first half, where has he been for these last 1, 2, 3, 4 drives? And look, I get the first two series that Dobbs is in because Ben's not out of the locker room yet. I'll throw those to the wayside. But you know what? If you put Ben back in as soon as he comes back out on the field and they score, we aren't talking about this anymore. At least you've given yourself the best chance to win. Now, Tomlin was, of course, and I think he's going to get killed this week. I've defended Mike Tomlin, but and I still think he is maybe one of the top five coaches in the NFL. Doesn't mean he's perfect, but he botched this one. This is going to fall on his shoulders, and he is going to take a lot of heat for this, especially in his press conference, because he flat out said Ben was ready to go when he came back out on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I've defended Tomlin, until I've been blue in the face. And again, I don't think he should be fired. I know a lot of people are going to be calling for his job, especially if this ends up being in a playoff season for the Steelers. I'm not going to make those knee-jerk reactions because, quite frankly, I still believe, even if the play calling is questionable, you still have to execute. And we've seen too many times this season when the Steelers just simply have not executed. And we have as talented of a roster and a veteran roster, especially on offense, that the Steelers have. You can't make it seem like that's the coaching. Big guys have to show up in big moments in play, and the Steelers haven't done that. But Ben not being in the game and in that situation, I was under the assumption that he was going to be in the locker room at halftime, going to go get checked up, maybe get some X-rays, make sure everything's structurally sound. If it was his ribs or his shoulders or whatever they were talking about, because I don't think anyone really knew other than they were speculating ribs. I thought he was going to come out there, maybe. I know there was the one challenge the Raiders made about the, I think it was Juju on the sideline, getting 2 feet down. I thought that was going to be the moment where Ben was going to go and take that extra time to get some warm-up throws in and come back into the game, or even the drive after that, since I believe that was right afterwards when the Steelers kind of went 3 and out. I thought that would be the moment where he would come back, and he didn't. And I figured with the fact that he still had his hat on, if he was really that seriously hurt, he'd have the pads off. I saw no reason for him not to come back in the game. And then, like you said, for Tom to flat out say after the game that he was good to come back in, you're in a game against a team that you have had very poor success against on the road. You would think you'd want to have your Hall of Fame quarterback who had played, honestly, one of his better games of the season, as far as I'm concerned. There were a couple errant throws, but all in all, Ben played a very efficient game. I don't know why you don't want to put him back into the game, at least give yourself a chance to get ahead. And I understand maybe the logic is the fact that the Steelers had the lead and Dobbs wasn't costing them the game, but he certainly wasn't doing anything to help them. If that's the case, I think that's still mismanagement, because in the NFL, nothing's given. You have lost 2 games in a row. You're trying to you know the Ravens lost, the Patriots and the Texans lost. They have the Patriots coming to town next week. This is a game that you needed to win to at least keep yourself afloat and maybe even keep yourself in contention with getting a potential bye, especially if you're able to snag a win against the Patriots next week. I saw it as mismanagement. I don't know why Ben wasn't in that game, and especially in a key moment like that where you see that your team is not moving the ball whatsoever. You had that some spark. Ben could have been that. They didn't do it. I'm disappointed in Tomlin. disappointed in how that all transpired, and I don't really know what went on. I'm sure we'll find out something maybe in the next coming days. Ben always has his interviews, and, you know, they're typically colorful. So I'm sure we'll hear something about that on his radio show. Maybe that'll give us some answers, but until then, I'm very disappointed in how that all transpired in the second half today.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to Joe about this, through the back channels here, and, you know, his opinion was he didn't put Ben in earlier because he had the lead, and why risk getting him hurt further, and especially when you don't know the full diagnosis. And that's what we don't know. We really don't know what the full diagnosis was. But in my mind, it's kind of like what you said. Look, this is a place they haven't won in a gazillion years. Ben's never won here. This was a game that was a must-win game, in my view. They absolutely had to win this game because the next two may be unwinnable games in some people's minds. I think they can win them both, but they certainly can't win them the way they've been playing. You got the Patriots, and then you got to go to New Orleans and play the Saints. All right. A lot of people are chalking both of those games up as losses, and if that's the case, they had to win this game, especially with the Ravens eventually losing the game that they lost in Kansas City. They needed this win. They are now in jeopardy of not just, you know, not forget the bye. They're in jeopardy of not being able to win this division because the Ravens have a much softer schedule than the Steelers do to end out this season, and they're only clinging to a half-game lead. So with all those accounts, those things taking into account, you can't hold back. You know, you need to have some aggression. This should have been, you know, there's that famous Tomlin quote where they're going to unleash hell. Well, this was when you needed to do it. Yep. You know, you needed to show that killer instinct. That's and God knows Steelers fans have been decrying the fact that this team does not have a killer instinct and they don't put their foot on people's throats when they have the opportunity to do so. They needed to do that in this game. They needed to come out and you know what? If Ben's not ready to go the first series, fine. I see Dobbs being in there. But as that second series starts to unfurl, all right, they get a first down. In my mind, Ben should have been back in that game. Period. I get it. Josh made a nice throw to Juju. It was a completion. You want to see what's happening. But they should have put Ben back in at that point and let him try and win this game. Because, you know, we are, as you said, we are back to the point, sadly, where if the Steelers score too fast at the end of the fourth quarter and the other team's got any amount of time, you no longer feel like they're going to win the game. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, and I'm to a point where I didn't used to be this way. I typically used to be in the mindset, the Steelers get that last score, I can trust them to close down. I don't have that faith right now. You know, you see it every week, it seems, that the Steelers have too close of a game on their hands, or they're down in the fourth quarter and come back, and for whatever reason, you know, they leave just too much time on there. And I actually, believe it or not, I applaud John Gruden's management at the end of that game.
Absolutely.
You know, he had a timeout on the board, and I know a lot of people I saw on Twitter were saying, well, why isn't he calling the timeout there to stop the clock? You know, it's second down. He has like less, I think it was 30 seconds or so left on the clock. He wants the walk-off because he knows the Steelers are dangerous when they want to be with Big Ben on the field. As we saw, you know, imagine if he would have left a little bit more time on that clock and they make that Juju, that James Washington, the Juju trick play. Steelers realistically can throw a ball in the end zone and get a touchdown there and not have to worry about kicking the field goal to walk off or at least tie it to go into overtime. So I applaud John Gruden's time management for that, which I never thought I would say. And, you know, I think realistically you need to have that killer instinct. And in Pee Wee football, you can pull your guys out. You can afford to pull your foot off the gas a little bit and say they're kids, let them go. In the NFL, there are no style points. You have to make sure that you get the win because anyone can come back in the league, no matter how abysmal of a team they are. I think you look at the AFC right now specifically, you know, the Chiefs are the quote-unquote cream of the crop, and as they should be because Pat Mahomes is playing out of his mind right now. But there are no teams in the AFC this year that I think are perfect, that can't be beat on any given Sunday. And that's including the teams that are below the playoff teams right now, teams like you know, the Browns, the Bengals, the Ravens, the Colts, you know, those teams all have proven they can win when they need to. The Raiders are a team that seems to be supporting and playing around John Gruden. I know there's a lot of rumors you hear leaking out of Oakland, but they've always been a gritty team to their core, and they're not going to just go down lightly. I know they've been blown out sometimes this year, but they've also stuck in with some teams this year. We just saw them do it last week against the Chiefs, who are the, you know, supposed cream of the crop in the AFC. So to have a team like that that you is keeping around in the game, the Raiders are that team that would love nothing more than to get that one banner win and upset a team like the Steelers, where they had that history together, come back and get a win like that at home in front of their fans. And the fact that the Steelers were not willing to put the nail in the coffin, put the gas down, and just go and get the win was disappointing to me. And if they can't afford to do that against teams, you know, if you can put up 50 points on a team, put up 50 points on a team.
Absolutely.
Don't hold back and don't pull your foot off the gas there, because nothing is guaranteed in the NFL or in sports in general. Nothing is guaranteed. Anyone can win at any point.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% in the sense that I'm not calling for Tomlin's head, but this is questionable. There is no way to defend the choices that were made. And you talked about Gruden's time management. The Steelers had two timeouts. Why not force the issue yourself? I get it. If they don't get in right away, but when it was third and goal and fourth and goal, use them. Use them. Make them go ahead and take a chance. You ended up, by the time the kickoff came back out, you had 15 seconds on the clock. Yes, you pulled something out of your butt to get a chance to try and get a game-tying field goal. And in this one, I won't put the missed field goal to end the game on Boz. That's completely on the turf at that particular place. Look, it is out of Boswell's control that when he plants his foot, the turf gives way. He cannot control that, okay? So I'll forgive that kick. But did anybody feel confident that he was going to make it anyway?
No, not at all.
Not the way that it's been going. You know, and if you have, as you said, if they pull that play and they've got 40 seconds on the clock instead of 15, it's a different game. So I don't get why Tomlin felt compelled to hold those timeouts. You know, I can sort of see it, I guess. You know, you might need them for the drive, I don't know, for whatever. But why? Why not go ahead and just say, look, this is what we got to do. And try and give yourselves, again, I feel like when Dobbs was in the game, they went into super ultra-conservative mode. They stayed that way, hoping that somehow they were going to creep out of there with a 14-10 win and the Raiders weren't going to score again. Well, that was just not a realistic view of the game. You can't wait until, okay, we're down, let's put Ben back in. Put Ben in and keep the gas to the pedal to the metal. I am a bit frustrated. I don't know what else to say. You know, look, and probably there's not a lot else to say. You know, I tweeted at the end of the game, and I'll get your take on this before we close things out, because, you know, it's ugly and we need to get it behind us, and I don't know that we're going to anytime soon. But the Steelers are still in first place in their division for the moment. They've got a game against the Patriots coming up at Heinz Field, a game against the Saints in New Orleans. Then they have the Bengals to close the season out. On the flip side of that, they have a half game lead over the Ravens. And the Ravens, I'm trying to see if I can pull up the Ravens schedule here. They've got the Buccaneers. They've got the Chargers in LA. And then they've got the Browns, who beat them once this year already. But that is not the same kind of schedule the Steelers face. And it's not unrealistic to think that the Ravens can win two out of those three games and the Steelers can lose two out of their three games. And then the Steelers are on the outside looking in and the season's over. That's why I felt like this was a must-win game. They had to win two out of the last four games of the season. I think they still have to win two out of the last four games of the season, but now they got to win two out of the last three, which means they got to beat a top-tier opponent, something they have not done this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, like I said, the Patriots, I think this year more so than any year, are a beatable team. You know, and if the Steelers were playing at the same caliber that they were, you know, against the Panthers, I would be immensely confident in next week's game. You know, the Steelers haven't won in New Orleans since 1990. I know they don't play there very often. That's still, you know, not a place where they've been able to win. I mean, New Orleans owns the all-time series against Pittsburgh in the 15 or 16 games they've played. And I think realistically, those are two games that the Steelers do have the talent to win. But whether or not they actually do win those games is a completely different story. I'm personally, I mean, I'll be transparent. I picked the Steelers to lose this game, so I'm not entirely surprised that they lost. I'm disappointed in the manner in which they lost, but I'm not surprised they did. I'll more than likely be picking the Steelers to lose against the Patriots and probably pick them to lose against the Saints just until I see something different that gives me some reason to feel confident about them. You know, I still think they can beat the Bengals because the Bengals are kind of unraveling in front of our eyes right now. But, you know, is that one win going to be enough if the Ravens somehow miraculously pull an upset against, say, the Chargers? You know, no one knows. And until I see something different from the Steelers, I don't know how confident I can be in them. I'm not going to have a knee-jerk Yinzer reaction to how they've been playing because, quite frankly, I'm tired. You know, I'm tired of being this way because, you know, I would want one week where I can just definitively say the Steelers are going to win this game. And, you know, it's the NFL. That doesn't happen all the time. But I don't feel confident right now. And until, you know, maybe they will get an upset. Maybe they'll win out. You know, you never know. That'd be an awesome scenario to see happen. But I'm skeptical. I still think they make the playoffs in some capacity. Just because I think all those teams that are lingering around at 7-6, I think are kind of wobbly, so to speak. So I still think they sneak into the playoffs, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if, you know, they don't either, if the Ravens end up leaking ahead of them and they knock out. So I don't know what the thing. I'm just going to take every week at this point as a 1-1 playoff series and, you know, hope that when January rolls around, I still get the opportunity to watch Steelers football. But who knows?
Yeah, I think that's the way that this season has unraveled. Every game from this point out is a playoff game. Some people looked at it that way starting today, in which case the season would be over. But you know, they are still in it. There is still that glimmer of hope that will eat at our souls for the rest of the season. Yeah. You know, and they have a shot. You know, they're leading their division, so technically their fate remains in their hands. It's still up to them. If they can go and beat New England next week, which I absolutely believe they can, the even if it was on a fluky, weird play, they lost on the road to the Dolphins again. So, you know, Patriots can be beat. It's not like they are perfect. They have 4 losses this year. So they can win that game. They can beat New Orleans. New Orleans has shown that they can be beaten. And I agree with you. I think they'll beat the Bengals the last game of the year. It's just they've put themselves in a situation where, you know, there's certainly the chance that by the end of next weekend, we're talking about the second place Steelers. And that would be a really unfortunate turn of events. Yep. If the Ravens win against the Buccaneers and the Steelers were to lose to the Patriots. So, you know, don't give up hope, Nation. There's still some. But yeah, the fading light of the season is definitely dwindling on the horizon at this point. But it's still there, and the Steelers still have the opportunity to try and figure out a way to salvage the rest of this year. And who knows, maybe we'll look back on this and it'll be a Bettis over Urlacher moment that occurs next week if they finally cast off the demon of the Patriots and win that game. So, Professor, thank you for joining me and commiserating in this woefully disappointing Sunday.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, Brian. Just wish it was under better circumstances.
Absolutely. And for the rest of the nation, we'll be here. If you got questions, put them up on the comments in YouTube. Thank you again for the subscriptions. Turn the bell on. Subscribe if you haven't. We'll bring you content to try and help get you through the rest of this year. My name is Brian. His name is Zach. As always, it's chaos out there, so be kind.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.